Hello, and a very warm welcome to No Heathen Land, a podcast retelling macabre, intriguing, and just plain weird stories from the past, from God's own country, Yorkshire. In my opinion, Yorkshire is the perfect breeding ground for the most weird and wonderful tales. In Yorkshire, we have the rolling, vast countryside of the dales, dark, tangled woodlands, remote back roads, but also industry, hard labour, a history of staunch religion, farming, tight-knit communities, immigration, a welcoming attitude, intolerance, riots. Much of this documented, a vast amount not. It's the stories in between the newspaper headlines that I really want to get into. Through my experience working in local history, it's really quite surprising how many odd tales you come across simply by looking into one single person's family history, for example. A newspaper article, a diary entry, a theatre playbill, a photograph. I'm very lucky to have made friendships and connections with interesting and enthusiastic people right here in Yorkshire. Each episode will feature one of them as a very special guest, where we'll delve into some of the stories we've come across that have fascinated, baffled, and sometimes unnerved us. Because of the subject nature of this podcast, some stories will not be suitable for everyone. Approach with caution. Hello, and welcome to a slightly different episode of No Heathen Land. For this episode, I'm all alone. I have no guest. Is this because I wanted to grace you with my presence, uninterrupted by people more intelligent and eloquent than me? Is it because I have something personal to share? Or is it because I didn't organise a guest in time to fit in my self-imposed schedule? I'll never tell. You can make up your own mind. All that aside, I do have some interesting things to share with you in this episode. This episode is of the witchy variety. So for as long as I can remember, I've been fascinated with witches and witchcraft, probably starting with Roald Dahl's book The Witches, and subsequently the terrifying film. I did actually quite like the new one as well. Then there's The Witches of Eastwick and a series of books about various supernatural entities in Whitby, one of which being the Whitby Witches. Now, I don't think I've made that last bit up, and I'm going to call on my good friend Zoe, who I know listens to this podcast. Zoe, are the Whitby Witches books real? I seem to think that you've told me about them and maybe we both read them when we were about 10. Let me know. Anyone of my generation will have watched and hopefully loved the film The Craft as a teenager as well. It's iconic, stylish, sexy. I still really love that film today. I guess I wouldn't have a podcast about weird and wonderful things if I wasn't interested in witches and witchcraft, as they often form the basis of any good spooky story or character. I'm not an expert on witches, and I don't consider myself a witch, but I do think it's hard to not feel some kind of connection to witchcraft, especially in relation to the demonisation of women in history. We've all heard of witch trials, of course. However, I'm not going to go into that today. Maybe another episode. I do have a real fondness for a certain Knaresborough witch, Mother Shipton, so hopefully we'll come back to her at a later date. But today I'm just going to share three newspaper cuttings relating to witchcraft in Yorkshire, which I find interesting and I really enjoyed reading. The source for this episode is a book called MSS on Witches and Witchcraft. Now, I have written a talk on this book and I've got detailed notes on the text, which is a handwritten volume of what I've concluded are passages transcribed from first-hand accounts of witchcraft and the supernatural and descriptions of witch trials in the 17th century. I'll probably find a way to do an episode on the text because it is fascinating, but it's not all Yorkshire-based, and that's banned from this podcast. I'm also still finding my way through it, even after writing about it and, you know, spending a lot of time with it, because I find the purpose of it a bit baffling. Maybe we'll come back to it at a later date. However, in the back of this book are a trusty favourite of mine, newspaper cuttings, all witchcraft related, and around half of them are from Yorkshire. If you listen to the Halloween in Retrospect episode with Ross in January, you might remember me reading out some newspaper articles from a volume of cuttings compiled by Edwin Hick. And this volume and collection of news cuttings are by this very same man. So Edwin Hick is a bit of a mystery. I'd love to know a bit more about him. All I could find was that he lived in Leeds in a large villa on Morris Lane in Kirkstall. Well, that's where he's listed in the 1939 register. He was born in 1860 and died at the age of 78. A couple of years before his death, it seems he donated his collections of some writings and a large collection of news cuttings to Leeds Central Library. He'd compiled these news cuttings that span from around 1907 to 1946, covering a vast range of subjects, including folklore, literature reviews, dialects, the history of sundials, book prices, and my personal favourite, of course, ghost stories. He just seemed like an avid researcher, which I can certainly appreciate. He certainly wasn't listed as any kind of academic on the 1939 register again. He's listed as a shirt maker. So I can only presume that research and collecting news cuttings was a hobby. So without further ado, here are three stories on witchcraft in Yorkshire. I'll state the title, date published, and the newspaper in which these news cuttings appeared. I hope you enjoy. A Gift of Witchwood. Quaint Beliefs on the Yorkshire Wolds. 20th of July, 1933. By G. Nightingale. Yorkshire Post. I've just had a very strange gift. The strangest I ever remember. It's a piece of witchwood. Never had I seen, heard, or read of such a thing until one day recently when an old lady who was visiting in these parts mentioned quite casually that she had some at home. She seemed surprised that I knew nothing about witchwood and offered to show me hers if I could go to her home to see it. The other afternoon, I took my bicycle and set off through the quiet lanes where the hedges were crimson and heavy with the ripe hawthorn berries, past fields where the men were busy ploughing, and hundreds of squealing gulls were devouring worms as fast as the plough could turn them up. At last, I reached a village right in the heart of the Wolds, and there I found my old lady. Her cottage, just as she described, was in a stone's throw of the church. Greetings over, she insisted on showing me every part of her little home, and spotlessly clean it was. Then, leaving me seated by the kitchen fire, she bustled off to fetch the witchwood. It was a queer-looking object, barely the length of one's finger, but a trifle thicker and a brownish-yellow colour. It looked very much like the kind of wood that one sees in the heart of an old log or a tree stump that has lain for many years in the open, where it's been exposed to every kind of weather and is then suddenly split open. But from what kind of tree the witchwood had come, I could not tell. Pine seemed the most likely, yet the texture looked too close for pine, and it was not the right colour for oak. The lady could give no information beyond that it had once been the property of her great-grandfather. How it had originally come into the family, she did not know. The witchwood was laying in a tiny money box where the old lady's mother had always kept it, so that her money shouldn't be witched, for it was supposed to give protection from witches to anything that might be near it. 100 years or more ago, witches, the old lady said, were very active in this part of Yorkshire. And then she told me some strange tales of truth, of which she had herself was firmly convinced, and how both animals and people lost their lives through being witched by local witches. Nearly everyone in those days kept a bit of witchwood, she said, but she did not know anyone except herself who had any now. Her mother had had great faith in the witchwood, but she herself did not believe in it, though. If you keep on looking at it, it does fair mesmerise you, she said. Then, seeing how interested I was, she insisted on giving it to me. Protests were useless. She would never forgive me if I didn't take it. Besides, who would want it when her time was over? She made a motion indicating that she would have thrown it in the fire. Folk weren't interested in such things nowadays. They were all pictures and pleasure. None of them cared to listen to her tales. They hadn't time to be bothered. So you take it, honey, she said. Then we sat and talked about her family. The Witchwood did not seem to have brought them much luck. At one time, they had been very wealthy, for several generations, in fact. But an unscrupulous solicitor had managed to cheat them out of nearly all of their property. Their land was all gone, and now only a few pieces of lovely old furniture remained. At last, I said goodbye and set off for home, taking the Witchwood with me. And then a strange thing happened. Or so it might have been thought 100 years ago. That night, as I cycled home, I missed my way twice, each time going 2 or 3 miles in the wrong direction, and those miles had to be re-transversed. The homeward journey, instead of taking just over an hour, took well over 2, though I'm a quick rider. Then a violent thunderstorm came on, and I narrowly escaped a drenching. These things were only coincidences, of course. My mind had been on those strange tales of Witchwood, and, as I had not been over that road since childhood, it was easy to go wrong. The rain had been threatening all day, but one can see how, in a more superstitious age, coincidences such as those would most certainly have led to a profound belief in the Witchwood and in its magical powers. They would probably have caused its new owner to take it home again. But I shall not take my bit of Witchwood home. I mean to keep it. Witchcraft in Yorkshire, 16th of June 1934, Yorkshire Post. In 1583, a court of jail delivery was held at Hull when a poor old woman was sentenced to 12 months imprisonment and the pillory for witchcraft. During the 17th century, many innocent women suffered death in various parts of England for witchcraft and demonology, the magistrates of the period being so ignorant and superstitious that they employed itinerant impostors called witch-finders for their pretended knowledge of discovering witches, by cruelly pricking with pins all women suspected as such. One authority further says that as these witch-finders were paid so much per head for their victims, they seldom suffered any to escape their impious scrutiny. In 1603, May Pannell was hanged for that, among other crimes, that she had bewitched to death William Witham, who died at Ledston in 1593. According to one authority, she was executed at York, but Edmund Bogg of the Old Kingdom of Elmet says the place of execution was the crest of a hill at Ledston, which still bears her name. In 1604, the Vicar of Calverley and 5 of his parishioners executed a certificate which was presented at the assizes held at Wakefield, wherein they declared that Robert Hare, Isabella Hare, his mother, Anne Brigg, and Elizabeth Birkinshire, all of their own parish, were vehemently suspected of the devilish art of witchcraft. At a trial for witchcraft in 1655, Henry Hutchfield of Rhodes, near Rothwell, deposed that Catherine Earle struck him on the neck with a docken stalk, such like the thing his mare, upon his neck, also whereupon his mare immediately fell sick and died, and he himself was very sore troubled and perplexed with a pain in his neck, whereupon Anne, the daughter of the said Catherine, seeing him so pained, told him, "Doth the devil nip thee in the neck? And he will nip thee better yet." Then said Catherine, clapped one Mr. Franks between the shoulders with her hand and said, "You are a pretty gentleman. Will you kiss me?" Thereupon, the said Mr. Frank fell sick before he got home and never went out of the doors again, but died. The woman was examined by women of the village, and 2 witch marks were found upon her, a wart behind her ear, and another upon her thigh. Curse of the Witch of Wakefield, 15th of April 1924, Yorkshire Evening Post. At one time in this country, there was a prevalent belief in witchcraft. Mother Shipton is the one famous example of a 15th century Yorkshire witch, and Janet Benton is another of the 17th century. Janet and her son George lived together in a mud-thatched cottage in the outskirts of Wakefield in the early part of the 17th century. George had at one time served in the parliamentary armies, but for the most part spent his time in taverns, while his mother earned sufficient to maintain them both by her sorcery. She was consulted by rich and poor, charms she had for maidens, advice for farmers concerning their crops and stock, and for all she could indicate, coming events. At the time when witches were denounced as partners of the evil one, Janet was either too useful or too much feared, for she carried on her practices with profit and in peace. The Farmer's Right. The cottage Janet occupied adjoined land of the Bunny Hall Farm, tenanted by Farmer Jackson, from a Mr. Stringer of Charleston. Across this land was a public footpath, but Jackson one day decided to close the way. This was resented by the people, and by none more so than Janet and her son. George and the others of his tavern associates determined to break down the barriers erected, and one day were passing over the footpath when they were challenged by the farmer's man. In the argument which ensued, George threw a stone at the man, badly cutting him about the face. The farmer took the case to court, and Janet's son suffered for his defiance. At the same time, the farmer's right to close the footpath was established. Farmer Jackson was a man who desired to stand well with his neighbours, and one day he stopped as he was passing Janet's cottage and endeavoured to consolidate her, but she refused to listen to him. "Farmer Jackson," she said, "you shall soon know what it is to incur the wrath of Janet Benton, the wise woman of Wakefield. Within a 12-month and a day, you shall find out what cost you have set the law upon me and my longings. And from that day until your life's end, you shall rue that day's work." Fear and trembling. Farmer Jackson went away in fear and trembling, and shortly afterwards, the witch's curse began to operate. His wife suffered deafness. His children were suddenly stricken with strange maladies. His stock was depleted in one way or another. And all the time, his farmstead gave indication of ghostly inhabitants. Strange and awesome noises were heard, and shrieks and shouts disturbed the household at all times of the night, until the domestics fled, and none could be persuaded to take back their places. All this continued for 12 months and a day. Then both the ghastly noises and the farmer's misfortune ceased. But Jackson was then a ruined man. Despite his trials, the farmer was loath at first to charge the witch, but ultimately he did. And so, and one may read in the Surtees Society Journal of the witch trial of Janet Benton and her son, charged with witchcraft at York Assizes, June 7th, 1656. They were both convicted and suffered the extreme penalty. So there you have it, my janky one-woman episode. I hope you found the articles as interesting as I did. I'd love to hear from you as always. Do get in touch via my Twitter page, where I am at No Heathen Land. Or if you're feeling super fired up, leave me a review wherever you're listening. Why not? I don't have any reviews. You know, I'm not doing it for the reviews. I don't know if you can tell. but yeah, I'd love to hear from you. Do drop me a tweet if you wish. I've put links to interesting bits and bobs, including the reference for this book, which is available to view in Leeds Libraries. If you would like to look at MSS on Witches and Witchcraft. Thank you to Luke for editing assistance, and to you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. I'll be back next month, hopefully with a friend. For now, take good care. Goodbye.